Hello, one and all, and welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Suffield. I am your host, and I'm super excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be talking about the Kane himself. We're going to be talking about our favorite films directed by the one and only Paul Thomas Anderson. This is an episode that's been a long time coming. This is an episode that I've been super hyped to do. PTA honestly might be my favorite working filmmaker. I'm not entirely sure. You could ask me tomorrow and it could be a completely different answer. But right now, at this time, at 9:58 a.m. EST, I think PTA is my favorite working filmmaker. I mean, my God, there's so much to be said about this man. He seriously is just one of the best. I cannot even properly describe the feeling that I have towards him. It's like Nicole Kidman says, that indescribable feeling we get. Like, that's how I feel whenever I walk into a PTA movie. And I'm super hyped to talk about him. But I'm also super, super excited to welcome today's guests. So, she is a contributor for Awards Watch. She is a scholar of the Best Actress winners. She has a cat named Daniel Day-Lewis, which is very fitting because DDL will be brought up many times throughout this episode. But she is the co-host of Oscar Wilde. She is one of my absolute favorite people in this community. She's seriously just one of the best. And I'm not just saying that because she's here. I legit believe that this person is just one of the best in this community. It is such a blast and such an honor to welcome Sophia Simonello to Film Fragments. Hello, Sophia. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for having me. You said something really key about PTA, our king, our father, Paul Thomas Anderson, which is that it's indescribable. You don't know why he's one of your favorite filmmakers, but he is. And I feel the same way. So I'm so excited to talk about his filmography today and dig into it.
I'm super excited to finally do this. This has been a long time coming.
I know.
For a little story for the listeners, when I started this podcast almost a year ago, I reached out to you and I said, hey, let's talk about PTA. And you're like, great, awesome. Now fast forward to almost 9 months later, and now we're finally doing this.
Yeah, I'm a busy girl in it, like Daniel Day-Lewis. Just kidding. I'm nothing like Daniel Day-Lewis. But yeah, I'm excited that we finally get to do this.
I'm so, so excited. And now it's time for the curveball question. It is time to hear your answer. So you have the opportunity to take Daniel Day-Lewis character. You have the opportunity to take a Paul Thomas Anderson character out to dinner, whether it's with your family, friends, or just yourself. You have the option to pick one guy and one girl. Which characters would it be and why?
Oh, so this was so hard because so many characters from Paul Thomas Anderson films are so prickly and they get into a lot of trouble and aren't exactly dinner companions you would want to introduce to your family. But my answer here, I would go with Reynolds and Alma together. I want to see that dynamic. I want Alma to give us breakfast for dinner. That is sort of the vibe I'm thinking of here with both of us. I want to observe their dynamic as a couple. And I'm most like Cyril, I would say, of all of the characters in the Paul Thomas Anderson world. She is the one who I identify with the most. So I feel like, I don't know, it would be a welcome dynamic. It would be a little scary, but I am here to eat a Welsh rarebit with a poached egg on top, not too runny. I could go through the whole breakfast order, but I'm not going to. I'll save that for a little later. But yeah, I would pick Alma and Reynolds. There were some other characters in the running. I considered getting milkshakes with Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood, because of course it had to be a Daniel Day-Lewis character for my man answer here. But he's a little too scary, a little too volatile. Like, I don't want him to hit me over the head with the glass when he's finished with the milkshake or anything like that. And I also considered getting vodka gin martinis with Alana. I mean, I love Alana from Licorice Pizza. And, you know, at the age where I am in my life, I'm almost 30. So I'm a little older than the character from the film. And I feel like I could relate to her in a lot of ways, but also give her a little bit of wisdom and tell her it's going to get better.
Well, I knew I was correct. I knew you were going to pick Phantom Thread. It would have been out of character for you if you didn't pick any Phantom Thread characters. But the fact that you picked both of them, I'm like, yeah, it only makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I guess going off that, I guess I'm going to be very basic. I'm going to say Alana Kane and Gary Valentine, just because, yeah, like, the dynamic between the two of them is just so fascinating. Gary is so charming. Alana is all over the place. I love the both of them so much. And my God, the love for this movie that I have is really insane. It's literally, not to bring up the word again, but it's indescribable, and we'll talk about it later on in the episode. But yeah, I would definitely go with Alana and Gary. I mean, the vodka gin martini is, that's just so great.
Yeah, you could go to Tale of the Cock. Yeah, you could go to Tale of the Cock, get his reserved table, everything like that. I feel like,
oh, my so God. Great. Oh, God. Oh, my God. I can't wait to talk about that movie. I haven't been able to talk about that movie on this podcast yet, so I'm so excited that we finally get to talk about it.
We'll definitely talk about it.
So hyped. So to go into a little bit about yourself, talk a little bit about your journey with film, what got you into it, and talk about what you do over at Oscar Wilde.
Yeah, so I have been into film for as long as I can remember, really since I was a little kid. My parents are both very into film, and they always really encouraged my curiosity around film. They were never really critical of the types of films that I wanted to watch or what I was interested in. My parents both really love horror and movies from the 70s, which really, I think, inspired and influenced my taste. My mom is also a really big PTA fan, and they let me watch a lot of movies way too young because I was so interested, and they thought that was, I don't know, good for my film education to watch movies like The Godfather and Carrie and Rosemary's Baby when I was, you know, 10, 11 years old.
Oh my God.
So really early. And those, of course, left an impression on me in different ways, but also really influenced my taste and what I'm looking for when I seek out films. And Paul Thomas Anderson really connects to that, and we can get into that in a little bit. But I also really love Turner Classic Movies. When I would go to my grandparents, we would watch old movies all the time. And I remember being around 10. And that was when my library card finally allowed me to get movies out of the library. And I got Sunset Boulevard out. And that completely changed my life. And again, I was like in fifth grade, but I just thought Gloria Swanson was the most incredible actress I'd ever seen. And that really opened my eyes also to classic film and just to the different styles of filmmaking, performing, how films look on screen. And I'm a very emotional movie watcher, and I love films that just make you feel different things, whether they're positive or, you know, more poisonous, like some of the films we'll talk about today. And with Oscar Wilde, so I started Oscar Wilde end of 2019, early 2020, so right around the Parasite Oscar year. My good friend Nick Ruhrkraut, who I've been friends with since my sophomore year of college, so we've been friends for around 10 years now, and we actually became friends because we both found out that we loved David Fincher, and that was our like gateway into our friendship. And we would always talk about films together and talk about the Oscars, which my dad loves the Oscars. And every year around Oscar time, it's so funny. He's so good at predictions. It's insane. But my mom, whenever I tell her I'm nervous about the Oscars or anything, she's like, you can blame your dad because he would let you stay up really late when you were like 3 or 4 years old to watch the Oscars with him. So yeah, that was definitely important to me. But so the Oscars were always just a fun thing. And I think they're a fun way to get into film history and learn more about what's, you know, going on in the zeitgeist at the time, looking at best picture winners of the past, who won key categories, things like that. And Nick was always my go-to person to talk about the Oscars with for years. And then we decided to start Oscar Wilde together. And it has been such a joy ever since. We'll be starting our fourth season of the show in a few weeks, which is crazy. I mean, when we started, we thought we would have like 5 listeners and it would just be our friends and family. But it's really grown into such an amazing community of listeners, and it's something I look forward to every week. And what we do on the show, we just do Oscar retrospectives, we cover the current season, we play fun games. We have a lot of variety on the show, which I feel like was something we always wanted to do throughout. So it really has been just such an incredible experience. And thank you for being a listener.
Oh, absolutely. I love your guys' show so much. Smash and Pass. Smash or Pass.
Oh, yeah.
It's like one of the best games of all. It's honestly just one of the best. And, you know, not to get into the Oscars too much, but how do you feel now that the season's over? Are you happy? Are you sad? Are you relaxed? Are you still stressed? Like, what's going on in your head now post-Oscars?
Oh my gosh, no, I'm good. I'm really relaxed. I'm happy that the season is over. The season just felt really long, but
yeah,
overall, it was rather pleasant, I would say. Like, the Oscars weren't crazy like last year when we had, you know, athletes presenting tributes to James Bond or Kanye songs playing over the Godfather tribute. You know, it was a very chill ceremony, and I think there were a lot of exciting history-making winners there, so I think all in all, this season was really good, and I'm just ready to watch 2023 movies now. I'm excited to move on.
And start campaign for Maestro.
Yes, exactly. My dear Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Charles Cooper.
Yeah, exactly. I am sad that Tar went home empty-handed. That was my favorite movie of last year, but it was never an Oscar movie, so, you know, that doesn't really affect, like, my enjoyment of the movie.
It was an award movie in our eyes, in our hearts.
Exactly, exactly.
So now going into our topic of Paul Thomas Anderson, obviously he's one of the most celebrated filmmakers working today. Why do you think a lot of people have such a high amount of respect for the guy? Why do you think a lot of people get excited whenever they see his name attached to a project? And what makes you such a fan of this wonderful man?
Yeah, so Paul Thomas Anderson is my favorite living filmmaker, and I think he is the best working American filmmaker today. Yes, that includes like Scorsese and Spielberg and all of these really incredible giants in the field, but there's something about Paul Thomas Anderson that I sometimes find I can't articulate just how personal his films are to me, but they just are. I'm always overcome with emotion when I watch his films, and sometimes I just think about like how powerful they've been for me and my growth as a cinephile. I think he has a sensibility and a style that other filmmakers today just don't have anymore. It feels very retro, which in turn feels so refreshing right now. And I know when I watch a Paul Thomas Anderson film, I can trust exactly what I'm seeing on screen. And I know he trusts me to interpret that, right? Like, he's not hand-holding me. He's not giving me answers, spoon-feeding. He loves ambiguity. And he's inspired by people like Altman, who is my other favorite director. I would say Altman is my favorite director who is no longer with us. And obviously, he's also inspired by Scorsese, Demme, Kubrick. Nothing is surface level to his films. And I also just love that he has such incredibly complex characters. I think people really love his characters, and that's because these people are real. They are not real in a sense that they're based on people and, you know, they're not biopics like that, but they're hard to love on the surface. But there's always something deeper underneath where you think, like, yes, this is how real people are, right? Like, this is how people actually act in the world. Like, people can make decisions that will make you question everything. Like, that's realistic. That's how these people are. And they're always, I think his actors give some of the best performances that have ever been put to screen. Daniel Day-Lewis, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Vicky Creeps, Leslie Manville, Paul Dano. Like, there are so many incredible performances in his movies. And I think that that is a way that people can really connect to his films and why people do. And I think there's also something there that's, like I mentioned, with 70s films and films that feel like they're from a different time. That often presents a difficulty for some audiences today because he loves the darkness within the light. He loves that. He's so good at that. And he's so good at relationships and violence. And I think that people are so drawn to love and violence together, and whether that's, you know, physical violence like the, you know, Eli Sunday and There Will Be Blood, or it's emotional violence like Reynolds yelling at Alma at the dinner table. Like, people are drawn to things like that in their films. Again, also, I think a big part of why I love PTA and why a lot of people love PTA is because my sense of humor is very dark, and so is his, and I just feel like we click. Like, I get it. And even his movies that I feel like people don't find funny, I'm always like, you know, it's okay to laugh. Like, you can laugh at this. This is hysterical. The fact that, like, Reynolds is being such a baby, or when Daniel Plainview is, like, floating in the water. Oh, my God. It's all so funny to me.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it on the head. He's just, like, I don't even know how to follow up to that of what you just said. Like, he is seriously just one of the best working today. He has a unique style that separates itself from all the other filmmakers working today. I love that you brought up his humor, how his humor is very dark, and it's not your typical kind of humor. Like, honestly, all of his movies have some sense of comedy to them, even if you don't think they're as funny as others. Like, some are funnier than others, obviously, but,
right,
like, you could watch Phantom Thread and laugh at it for what's going on. Same with There Will Be Blood. You could even laugh at something like The Master, like, very subtly, very small amounts of comedy, but, you know, it's there. It's incorporated somewhere throughout the film. I mean, yeah, like, you brought up how he directs some of the best performances that maybe have ever been put to screen. I mean, you brought up all those other people, but, like, you look at Adam Sandler, you look at Joaquin Phoenix, you look at even, honestly, even Alana Haim and Cooper Hoffman. Like, you just get these performances, and they're all so incredible, even from people that aren't actors, per se. Like, obviously, we'll talk about Alana Haim later on, but, you know, she had never acted before. She had never done a feature film. And then you watch her, and you're like, I feel like she's been acting for so long, and the fact that this is her feature film debut is really impressive. But then again, when you work with a director like Paul Thomas Anderson, you're going to get a great performance out of your actors. It's really incredible what he's able to do, and he's still going to this day. It's really impressive, and every time he has a film coming out, it's literally like an event. Like, the build-up to Licorice Pizza coming out was, like, so massive for me that that was just, like, I felt like that was honestly, the way people get excited for when the Super Bowl is coming out, I'm like, no, I got hyped when Licorice Pizza was coming out. That was my Super Bowl. That was my Super Bowl.
Oh, that was, I mean, that was, we will definitely talk more about Licorice Pizza, but that was also a Super Bowl for me. I left my family Thanksgiving weekend early to go back to New York and see Licorice Pizza. Like, I left the day after Thanksgiving because I had to go see that movie. And I went, I think it was like at 10:30 in the morning, like the first screening of that Friday after Thanksgiving. And I saw it again the same day. I saw it at 7 o'clock that night.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it's they're events. They really are. And it's just, it's so nice to have an artist like that who is making these sorts of movies that people can get so excited for that aren't event movies in the way that you think of for like Marvel or Avatar or anything like that. They're different, right? So I love absolutely. I love that. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I just say, without further ado, let's get into the list. I am so, so curious to hear your top five PTA films. What is your number five favorite PTA film of all time?
Yeah, so before I get into my list, I just want to say there are so many films of his that I love, but it was fairly easy for me to pick a top five when I settled on it. And I just wanted to preface that because there are so many outside of the top five that I love deeply. And I hope you included some of these so that we can still talk about them. So we'll see.
I'll do my best.
All of this to say, my number five is Boogie Nights, which I really love so much. I saw this in 35mm because I wanted to see the Licorice Pizza trailer when he was playing it ahead of retro screenings. I went to a draft house screening of Boogie Nights so I could see the Licorice Pizza trailer. And it was a magical experience all around because we got the trailer. It was the only trailer they played before the movie. And then the movie, which I'd only ever seen, I'd seen it many times before seeing it in theaters, but it was the first time that I had seen it in theaters. It was just a breathtaking experience. And I didn't understand when I had watched it when I was younger, just how young he was when he made that movie. And it is such an incisive commentary on stardom, on celebrity, and on an industry, and how industry priorities can shift over time. It is the only Mark Wahlberg performance that I like. And I also think that Julianne Moore as Amber Waves is just fantastic. She's one of my favorite characters in the Paul Thomas Anderson filmography. But also, I think her performance is fantastic, and it's something that we hadn't seen from Julianne Moore before. I think this is a film where PTA wears his influences on his sleeve. It is big, it is an ensemble film like Altman, but it also has these moments, these long takes with tracking shots, with Steadicam that are very much like Scorsese and Goodfellas. And that, I feel like, is so important to be able to see that for a young filmmaker. But he also has heightened these styles. He's not ripping them off or taking them directly and copying them. Instead, he's making them a bit more intense and showing his command over the craft. And I love the fact that we have this easy breezy first half where we're seeing what the porn industry was like in the 70s, and then that flip that happens in the middle when everything suddenly becomes darker and we see how he builds tension so significantly. And like, Don Cheadle is wonderful in it, Alfred Molina in that scene. And I think now so many filmmakers have tried to make their own Boogie Nights, and I don't know if any of them have been as successful. So I love this movie. I think it's funny. I think it's beautifully shot. I love the music, and it is just essential PTA.
So this is actually my number 6. It was super close to making the list. I love Boogie Nights. It's absolutely wonderful. I just rewatched it. I was at LAX waiting for hours for my plane, and I'm like, I'm going to watch Boogie Nights. And then I would have to like make sure no one's watching me watching this movie on my laptop. But, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I love it so much. It's so good. Yeah, it's crazy that PTA was 27 when this movie came out. It's like, wow.
It's like, what have I done?
what am I doing with my life? And here he is making this movie with all these high-profile actors. And it's incredible. Like, honestly, like, I think this is Mark Wahlberg's best performance. I think this is the best he's ever been. Yeah. Julianne Moore, I'm glad you brought her up. She's incredible. Burt Reynolds, I loved him in this. Don Cheadle, Alfred Molina. I don't think I ever liked Heather Graham in anything before until I saw this movie. Like, she is absolutely wonderful in this. And One of my favorite supporting performances in this movie is William H. Macy. I think he's hysterical. Yeah. His reactions to everything is really, really absurd and hysterical. And then, not going to spoil what happens with his character, but let's just say that it's absolutely nuts what goes down with him. But yeah, it's really, really impressive. And, you know, for it being a long movie, honestly, I could have watched another hour of it. Like, I could have watched more. I would have loved to have followed these characters a lot more. Dirk Diggler was such a fascinating character and seeing his journey unfold. But yeah, I love Boogie Nights. That's a great, great pick. And, you know, Boogie Nights is definitely one of the more entertaining films in PTA's filmography. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go from an entertaining film to a not-so-entertaining film. My number 5 is The Master. And I have to say that this was a film that I put off for so long. Uh-huh. And I watched it when I was in high school, and I just don't think I understood it. Back in the day, I was like, what does this mean? I don't understand what he's going for, what he's trying to convey. And then during the height of COVID, I decided to just sit down and finally rewatch this movie again. And I was so transfixed by what was happening on screen. This might be, and this is, you know, again, you can ask me tomorrow, my opinion could change. This might be my favorite performance from Joaquin Phoenix. It's really tough to say what my favorite from him is, because, I mean, he's delivered so many incredible performances for the last couple of years. But this is a devastating performance to watch. And, You know, he's a broken guy, and he does all these terrible things. And then he stumbles across this boat, and then he meets Philip Seymour Hoffman, and everything just changes for him. The entire interrogation scene when they're just talking to each other is one of the best directed scenes of PTA's career. It's seriously just one of the best. I haven't seen this film in so long. I wasn't able to rewatch it before this podcast, but I remember just being so blown away by the score, the imagery, the editing, and the performances. Now, all three leading performances got nominated for Oscars. I know you're a big DDL fan. I love him in Lincoln, but if I was in charge of the Oscars, personally, I would have given Joaquin the Best Actor Oscar, because in my opinion, it's much better than the performance that he ended up winning the Oscar for a couple years down the road. Philip Seymour Hoffman, incredible work. Maybe my favorite performance from him as well. That's really tough, because obviously he's worked with PTA many times, and he's also been in so many wonderful films, but this is just, oh my God. That character, there's like certain sequences where he just says nothing, you just see it through his face, and it's such a beautiful performance. And Amy Adams, I think, is incredible in this as well. Talk about someone who unfortunately does not have an Oscar, that really should have one. That's a different discussion for another time, of course. But yeah, The Master is really unbelievable, and it's one that really took me a couple of viewings to appreciate, and I'm so glad that I'm on the train now where I really, really love The Master. So that is my number five. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
I'm going to pass.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear where it is. So now going into our number fours, what is your pick?
My number four is everyone's problematic fave, Licorice Pizza. I love Licorice Pizza so much. Two of my favorite movies of all time are Harold and Maude and Shampoo. And this movie feels like Harold and Maude and Shampoo found each other. And it is such a pivot from the singular character stories that he started getting into, where we have maybe one or two characters at the center, and they feel, even with the comedy involved, they feel very serious. They feel very important. Almost like PTA is trying to make the next great American novel, like with There Will Be Blood or The Master, like you mentioned. And this movie, I feel like he's returning to his Altman roots, but it feels, in my opinion, far more polished and mature than some of his earlier ensemble films, like Magnolia and like Boogie Nights, which I already talked about. And I feel like this movie is not about a romantic relationship in the way that people talk about it sometimes, but rather about attention and the need for attention when you don't know who you are. And I love the flip that happens in the film. So we have this easy, breezy fun with Huckster Gary early on, and then things suddenly get very, very real with Alana as we see her experiences with these older men. I think that, you know, everything is easy, breezy fun with Gary, and then things suddenly get so real with Alana. I love that when we get to see Alana's actual romantic pursuits, so outside of this infatuation crush with Gary, and we see this gross attention from older men, it's so crucial and so critical, and something that I think people were very eager to dismiss when they watched the movie outright. And the answer of like what Gary and Alana are, right? Like, are they a couple? Are they together? Anything like that? That doesn't matter. The question matters. The question of who are Gary and Alana to each other? What are Gary and Alana? That's what matters, because that sort of question, when you are young, makes you feel alive. When someone has a crush on you and you hear that, that taps into a very specific part of your brain that this movie really understands. He is such a master of tone in this film, and he gets that so right. And again, I think this movie is it's so much about attraction, infatuation, having a crush. And again, like with the real characters, I think if people don't think that this is how people behave, they're sorely mistaken. Like, this is a very, very realistic film about a specific sort of relationship that often has embarrassment attached to it, that has fondness attached to it, that has melancholy attached to it. And he somehow weaves all of those things together. And honestly, just seeing them run in the movie makes me cry every time. I don't know why, I can't explain it, but I love it so much. It is so wonderful.
Massive pass.
Well, we'll get to talk about it more later. That's great.
I'm super hyped to talk about it again. Okay. This is probably going to make you want to leave the podcast, and I apologize in advance.
It's okay. I know what it's going to be.
Number four, Phantom Thread. So I remember when I had heard that PTA and Daniel Day-Lewis were working together again, and I was super, 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 super excited to see what they were going to do together again. I literally didn't care what it was going to be about. I didn't care if it was going to be about the creation of Poo-Pourri. I would watch any collaboration between the two of them again. When I found out it was a fashion drama, I'm like, that's very interesting for PTA. That's a very interesting thing for him to do, especially after Inherent Vice. So I'm excited, of course. I saw the movie, and I will tell you that when you see movies like that in New Jersey, 98% of the people are not going to like it. And then there's the 2% that do like it. So I remember I went to the local art house theater when it came to Jersey. This very sweet old lady sat next to me, and she's like, "Did you like that movie?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I did." And she's like, "I thought it was boring." And I'm like, "Did I ask your opinion?" No. So this movie, I think, is really incredible. And it's weird because on paper, it doesn't seem like the kind of movie that I personally would love. But I don't know. Something about how PTA presents these characters is really, really great. It's a really riveting film. And, you know, it's very psychologically mind-bending. A lot of people are like, how could you find this fashion drama to be so good? And I'm like, because it's written well, it's directed well, and the performances are just literally, they shook me up. Obviously, we knew Daniel Day-Lewis was going to deliver. We all knew that he was going to kick ass and knock it out of the park. But Reynolds Woodcock is such a fascinating character because before you brought up how, you know, there's moments in the movie where he acts like a baby. He's like, "I'm trying to enjoy my meal. Can we please not do this right now?" It's great. It's so great. The little amount of patience he has, like, I see that in so many people. Like, I know so many people who are like that, especially when Alma is pouring and then she's lifting up the cup and lifting it down. Like, I could just see, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I could just feel his pain. I feel his pain in that moment. But his work as Reynolds Woodcock is so sublime. It's a fantastic performance. And if it really is the last time we're ever going to see him on screen, I mean, he went out literally with a bang. Like, literally, he went out on a high note. But I mean, we knew that with Daniel Day-Lewis. But Vicky Krieps as Alma, a true star make it performance. I had never seen her in anything before. I had never heard of her before. I saw the movie, and when I saw that she was in it, I was like, okay, Paul Thomas Anderson is not going to cast someone that can't act. He would never do that. So I knew that we were going to get a great performance out of her, and she is amazing. I thought she was robbed of a nomination. I thought she should have gotten way more love that award season. And Leslie Manville, oh my God. Oh my God. Literally a scene stealer in this entire movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, like, I can't even, again, it's hard to describe the feelings towards this guy's movies. And, you know, it moves slow, and a lot of people complained about that. But honestly, this is one of those movies that I think if it had moved super, super quickly, it wouldn't have panned out as well as it does. I think it was paced very well. The imagery is absolutely gorgeous. It felt like I was watching a movie from that time. It was so old looking and so grainy, and I think it was shot beautifully. Another thing that I love about PTA is that he still shoots all of his stuff on film. I'm an admirer of when filmmakers do that nowadays. Quentin Tarantino is an example. Christopher Nolan is an example of that. And the fact that Paul Thomas Anderson is still sticking with shooting on film stock, that's just so inspiring to me as someone who went to film school. Not to sound pretentious, but it's just a really great thing that he's able to pull that off. And I'm sorry, listen, I love Alexander Desplat. The score for Shape of Water is great. But Johnny Greenwood's score for Phantom Thread is seriously one of the best scores I've ever heard in my life. I literally will never understand how he didn't win the Oscar for this score. And I remember when I first saw this movie, and it said score by Johnny Greenwood. And I'm like, why do I know that name? Why do I know that name? And when I found that it was one of the guys from Radiohead, I was like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is not who I never pictured someone from Radiohead doing the music for a film like this. I mean, that's just so incredible to me that Johnny Greenwood has obviously done everything with Radiohead, and then he's done all these scores for PTA films. There's just so much to say about this movie that's been said already. And obviously, our lovely guest is going to say so much about this movie when she gets to it on her list. So obviously, with Phantom Thread being my number 4, are you going to pass or is this not on your list?
What if I said this isn't on my list?
Oh my God. I would literally be like shocked. I would probably flip over the laptop right now. I'd be like, what the fuck? I'm like, there's no way I have it on.
It's on my list. I'm going to pass.
So now going into our number 3s, what is your pick?
So my number 3 is The Master. I am so confounded by this movie in ways that I can only describe as thrilling and inspirational. I feel like this is just such a capital I important movie, but not in a way that feels pretentious. And that's because I think when we think of a lot of World War II era films, they are either war films where we are, you know, out on the battlefield with our soldiers, or they are these stuffy period dramas that don't actually get into the horrors of post-war life. And this is one of the most provocative pieces of art that I've ever seen that specifically looks at that time immediately post-war when servicemen came home and had to suddenly deal with everything that they had experienced there, and they had no support system to get through it. And Joaquin Phoenix, I would add to that list The Best Years of Our Lives, the William Wyler film. I think that's incredibly provocative for the time period specifically. So for your listeners, I do recommend that non-PTA film. But I think what Joaquin Phoenix does here that is so, so fantastic, and I actually agree with you, he's my personal Best Actor winner of that year. I would switch out Daniel Day-Lewis's Lincoln Oscar and give him an Oscar for Phantom Thread later on for that year. I feel like Joaquin, what he does here, you start to, from the first frames of this film, see his bizarre posture, see how he recoils away from the rest of the group. And it's a very physical performance, but it's a performance that sometimes just lives in his eyes. And it's sort of miraculous, I think, what he does in the role, and how it's almost like he's walking on a tightrope the entire movie, where you think like, he could do something outrageous at any moment. He could fall. He's in a position that is so unpredictable. And again, like I mentioned, not having a support system after the war, this film shows how people can be really susceptible to any form of community whatsoever, and why a person like him would be enticed to join something like the cause. And, you know, this movie has been described as a Scientology movie, like L. Ron Hubbard, everything like that. But that sort of feels like a Trojan horse. It feels like something that exists just to get our attention. But in reality, this movie is about a relationship between two men. And a lot of his films are about these sorts of relationships where it's almost like, and this comes up in Phantom Thread, it comes up in There Will Be Blood, it comes up in Hard Eight, Punch Drunk Love, lots of his movies where you get the sense that you are bad for me, but I can't live without you. Or I don't know how I'm going to, you know, move on to the next phase of my life without you. And that's something we feel, I think, through the relationship between Joaquin Phoenix's character and Philip Seymour Hoffman's character. The Philip Seymour Hoffman performance is unreal. I think it's the best supporting performance we have in a PTA film. It is just beyond incredible. And I think he's one of the greats if you look at the list of actors in his filmography. I love the scene when he sets up the camera when they're both in jail in the cells next to each other. It's breathtaking. It's just something that I don't know how he does it. He has such good instincts of how to shoot his characters to show the dynamic between them, right? You have the Joaquin Phoenix character who's incredibly violent and aggressive and volatile, and then you have Philip Seymour Hoffman who's just calm, and you see that questioning come through and how he's able to get people on his side. I also think that this film with Amy Adams, she's fantastic, and I love her as this Lady Macbeth type of character who is really in control of a lot of decision making. And I think Paul Thomas Anderson doesn't get enough credit for his female characters.
I think some of
his movies are so male oriented, and a lot of his fans are men. But, you know, as a woman who loves PTA movies, I think his female characters are fascinating, and they are very representative of a lot of the powers that women hold, a lot of our strengths, our weaknesses. And the women in The Master are fascinating. They all look alike in some ways, which I think is, you know, very important to the way that we see women throughout the film and the influences that women have on Freddie. But again, yeah, I think the female characters are fascinating, and they're not just avatars for, you know, desire or anything like that. Like, they're, especially in the case of Amy Adams, like, they're fully formed characters with fascinating things to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great pick. And, like, God, like, there's just so much in that movie that still lingers in my mind ever since mm-hmm. I first saw it. Even when I wasn't super high on the film, there was just so much that I couldn't get out of my head. And, you know, someone actually recently asked me, like, some of my favorite shots in a PTA film, which is tough because there's obviously so many great shots. But I think the shot from The Master that I remember sticking out so much to me was the shot where he's running in the desert. I don't know why, but that shot to me just, it hasn't left my mind. And, you know, like, I was looking up something about The Master just recently, and then that was the first image that came up of him running. It's just, oh my God, it's, God, and that score, I don't know what, it's just so good. He's, oh my God, he's just the best at what he did. He really is the best. Yeah. Oh, man. Number three for me, this is probably the one that I've watched the most other than the films in my top two. This was actually the first PTA movie that I ever saw. As a kid born in the late 90s and as someone who grew up watching Adam Sandler, I always found it very interesting whenever I would see comedic actors step out of their comfort zone and do serious performances. When I found out that Adam Sandler had done some dramas, I'm like, there's no way. There's no way that he could pull off being in a drama. So one night I was just browsing around television and I saw this ad for this movie called Punch Drunk Love coming on like HBO, one of the streaming services. And I'm like, oh, I like Adam Sandler. I'll give it a watch. Why not? And then I watched it and I was just like, where did this come from? Like, where did this side of Adam Sandler come from? Punch Drunk Love to me is really impressive considering that, number one, it's PTA's shortest film. It clocks in at 90 minutes, so it's really short compared to everything else that he's done. Number two, I find it so interesting that right after he did Magnolia, which I still believe, if I'm not mistaken, is still his longest movie to date.
Yeah.
So it's that movie's Magnolia 3 hours.
Magnolia is a monster.
Long. Yeah. So it's 3 hours. It's literally an epic. So to go from a 3 hour movie to literally cutting that in half by going down to a 90 minute movie is really impressive. And making it a romantic comedy, romantic dramedy, and Adam Sandler is the lead. Somehow PTA was always fascinated with Adam Sandler. He loved Adam Sandler's comedies. He loved him on Saturday Night Live. So then I always love reading about how when PTA reached out to Adam Sandler, Adam Sandler was like, I don't think I'm good enough to be in your movie. There's no way that me, of all people, could be in your movie. And then he read the script for Punch Drunk Love and was just so in love with it. And, you know, for a long time, I would have said that this was the best performance of his entire career. And I think it's Barry Egan is a really fascinating character because he's very shy. He's very socially awkward. He wants to be with someone. He's so focused on work and everything. He has this crazy relationship with seven sisters, which I cannot even imagine being in a family where you have seven sisters, all of whom pretty much pick on you and say all these things about you. Listen, the first time I saw this movie and he went to the party and he broke the door, the glass door, I'm like, yep, okay. I feel you, man. I feel your pain. I totally feel you. And it was just so interesting seeing this side of Sandler because we're used to seeing him play the goofy comedy character. And for him to play someone very restrained, but then he could explode at any second, like literally any second. Like, there are outbursts that he has throughout the movie, like when he calls his sister when he's in Hawaii. He's like, I'm going to fucking kill you. I'm going to fucking kill you. Stop fucking talking to me like this. It's so good. It's so incredible what he's able to pull off. And the relationship between him and Emily Watson is really tender and so beautiful. And, you know, they're both very different people. They both have very different goals and who they want to be with. And then they just find each other, and it's this really beautiful and honest relationship. And, you know, there was a period in my life where, similar to Barry, there were days where I just wasn't fond of who I was. And I was able to relate to that so well. And I feel like there's an element of this movie where anyone could be like, I could relate to that in some capacity. And, you know, for PTA, again, to go from something very bombastic and very grand and epic like Magnolia to something smaller like A Punch-Drunk Love is really incredible. It just shows the range that he's able to do. I love that he's a filmmaker that does so many different genres and so many different projects. Like, there are filmmakers that I respect that do stick to one specific genre, one specific tone, one specific length with their movies. I don't want this to make it sound like I'm dissing anybody like Scorsese. I love Scorsese. He's the best. But, you know, PTA does something different, and I really appreciate that about him. And the phone call between Sandler and Philip Seymour Hoffman is one of my favorite scenes in PTA's career. It's so hysterical. PTA just screaming shut up to him on the phone, like, repeatedly is really great. And the car crash sequence where Barry is running away, it's kind of comedic because Sandler's like screaming, sticking out his tongue when he's running, like kind of doing a Tom Cruise run in Mission Impossible. It's really, really hysterical. But it's also really terrifying when you think about it. It's like, oh my God, for the entire movie, it's like so sweet and wholesome. And then all of a sudden, this intense sequence happens where these guys gain up on him. And then later on, Barry fights them. And it's really, really great. Like, all, you're like, where did this come from? What the fuck? And yeah, I love Punch-Drunk Love. And I also recommend people buying the Criterion. There's a lot of great supplements on there. The Criterion artwork is so gorgeous. It's literally of the last shot of the movie. And there's the colors throughout this movie, too. I remember when I first saw this movie, I'm like, what's the point of these weird transitions with the colors? But it's really gorgeous. Robert's imagery is... Elswit's imagery is just some of the best. Like, he is one of the best working. And yeah, I love Punch-Drunk Love so much. And I really hope that down the road, Sandler and PTA work together again, because I feel like now at the stage of Sandler's career where he's working with all these acclaimed filmmakers and doing all these dramas, I really feel like at some point they could collaborate together again. I really feel like that would be a great thing. So Punch-Drunk Love is my number three. I'm going to assume it's not on your list, but I'll ask anyway. Are you going to pass or is this not on your list?
It's not on my list. But I am always just intrigued by people who love it so much because I do like it. I enjoy it. But it's just, I feel like I'm just so drawn to the Daniel Day-Lewis, like, big dramatic epics or the sprawling ensemble pieces. And this one doesn't really fit neatly into that, which I think makes it intriguing and makes it just such a great watch because you get to see Sandler doing drama, like you said. And I loved his performance in Uncut Gems as well, and that movie doesn't happen without the Safdies watching Punch-Drunk Love, and I feel like so many filmmakers and actors cite this film as one of their favorite PTA films. Barry Jenkins, he loves Punch-Drunk Love, and I think a lot of that is because of the use of color and the use of the shots specifically around our characters, whether it's the extreme close-ups like Demi or... we see the characters like running, which that's a key theme in PTA's films. But yeah, I like this one as well. And I feel like, yeah, it has like all PTA films do, it has its devoted following. Yeah.
Yeah. It just really clicked with me when I saw it. And I think it is so special to me because it was the first film from him that I saw. And, you know, just again, see, like, I can't even imagine like being very active with watching movies in 2002 and then hearing that Adam Sandler is going to be starring in the new film from the guy who made Boogie Nights and Magnolia. Everyone's like, what? Adam like Sandler? Him? Really? The guy from Mr. Deeds and Happy Gilmore and Big Daddy? No. And oh my God. And you know, I love that you brought up the usage of close-ups in this movie because that close-up when he does have the phone call and then the phone call ends and like 10 seconds later it cuts back to him just staring at like waiting for a response when yet he already hung up. Hoffman already hung up. Like, it's just, oh my God, so good. It's just so good. And then he just carries the phone around him, like the cord already disconnected. And I'm just like, this is just so great. It's just so great. And you know, PTA doing essentially a rom-com, like I love that he chose to do that, especially after Magnolia. And then after this, he did There Will Be Blood, which is like the shifts are just, it's absolutely insane. It's absolutely insane. And with that being said, it's time to get into our top two. So, obviously, there's a film that I passed on before that you mentioned. There's a film that you passed on that I mentioned. And there's one film that we haven't mentioned in particular. So, I have a feeling that that is your number two. So, let's see if I'm correct. So, what is your second favorite PTA film of all time?
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up. It's There Will Be Blood. It's incredible. When I make lists around PTA, I get so torn when I get to the top two, because I do believe that There Will Be Blood is the best film he has ever made. I fully believe that. It's not my favorite, so it doesn't exist and live at number one, but I believe that this, hyperbole time, I believe that this is the best movie of the 21st century so far about America, period. I don't think anything really comes close. I think it feels like, I mentioned like the great American novel, and like it's something that he's gifted us. And the opening of this film, where it feels like a silent film, it feels like something Kubrick or Welles would have made. I think there's a path from Citizen Kane to Chinatown to There Will Be Blood. And you could look at those as maybe the three great movies about America that have existed, specifically about power structures and what people do when they're faced with a decision related to politics and greed. And capitalism and religion, and that fight between capitalism and religion, is so core to the American identity. And I think that PTA explores that in beautiful, brilliant ways in this film. It feels mammoth and precise and strange. The Daniel Day-Lewis performance, I think it's in the conversation for one of the greatest performances ever put to screen by a man. I really do think it is. He fully transforms into Daniel Plainview, and just when you see him at the beginning, hurt and poor and broken, there is still a belief and a feeling by looking into his eyes that he's going to stop at nothing to get what he wants and to eventually rise in power. I think his relationship with HW is fascinating, who is not even his son. And the fact that, you know, a father and son somehow represents the American ideal, so he can't get rid of him, but he's also ashamed of him. And I don't know, I think it's just so beautifully shot. You mentioned Robert Elswit. I think he's one of the key collaborators for PTA. The Johnny Greenwood score of this movie is... I can't even talk about it without getting like teary-eyed with how profound it is. Like Proven Lands, that track, it's a bop. You could play it on the radio.
Oh my god.
But yeah, I mean, it's hilarious, it's dark, and I think it also is the closest thing we have to Kubrick today. I'm imagining you might have it, so I'll save maybe some other comments.
Yeah, I will get to it when I get to it. I'm okay. Very excited to talk about it when I get to it. So my number two is Licorice Pizza, which, look, I understand all the controversy behind it. I totally get that. But here on Film Fragments, we stay positive. We don't talk about that. So we're going to push that aside and just talk about how much this movie means to me. So I was telling Sophia, like, me and Sophia have had so many conversations about the brilliance of this movie and just how impactful it has been for both of us. And Coming of Age is my favorite genre of all time. So when I heard that PTA was doing a Coming of Age film, I got so excited. I was so hyped. A Coming of Age film set in the 70s, following the child actor. I'm like, oh my god, say no more. I'm there. I'm literally there. Oh, Philip Seymour Hoffman's son is starring in it. Okay, perfect. I'm intrigued. I'm interested. Oh, the lead singer of Haim is going to be in it. Sure, why not? That's interesting. Okay. And literally, when that trailer came out, I'm not even joking, I watched that trailer on loop so many times. It was nonstop in my head. I would play it in the background. I would literally be at work, and I would just lay my phone down and just click the on loop tab on YouTube and just play the trailer on repeat. And I couldn't stop. I was addicted for 2 months. I was like, okay, I need this movie now. I need it in my life. Now, I generally do not go into New York to see movies that are going to come out in New Jersey at some later point. But this was a special case because 70mm. It wasn't coming out to New Jersey until Christmas. I'm like, I'm not waiting a whole month to see Licorice Pizza. I refuse to wait that long to see this movie. So I went opening night to go see it, and I still have my ticket pulled up. 7 p.m. AMC Lincoln Square. I went to that screen. I called my friend because someone was supposed to come with me. I'm like, do you want to see this movie Licorice Pizza with me? I know you don't care about movies, but do you want to come with me? And she's like, yeah, sure. I like movies. Why not? And I'm like, all right, perfect. And then she's like, oh, who's in this movie? And I'm like, oh, the only person you probably know is Bradley Cooper. And then the movie begins, and then Alana comes on screen. She's like, wait, you didn't tell me that Alana Haim was in this? And I'm like, all right, yeah, she's in this too. But my God, this movie is just so pure, and it just leaves a smile on my face that when I saw this movie when it came out, this was the kind of movie that I was honestly looking for. I was looking for a movie that just felt so relaxing and laid back and just helped put a smile on my face. Like, it didn't make me feel depressed. It didn't make me feel angry. It didn't make me feel annoyed. Like, I was genuinely happy the entire time I was following these characters and watching this movie unfold. And it's just so relaxing to just see a movie like this come out. And I love a slice of life movie. I know that a lot of people are like, there's not much plot to this movie. I was interested the entire time. Like, I loved following all these different stories, these different segments. Sean Penn, and then obviously Bradley Cooper, and then Benny Safdie. Like, I really loved following all these characters. And my God, the amount of quotes that I say from this movie all the time is really sick, because I can't stop quoting this movie on a daily basis. I just love it so much. Like, I randomly would text my friend and be like, stop using time as an excuse, Alana. Our roads took us here. I love it. It's just, it's so good. I just love it so much. And yeah, I mean, the performances, I mean, these are two of the best debut performances that I've seen in such a long time. And I was really holding out hope, and I knew that it wasn't going to happen, but I was like, could Alana find a way of slipping into the Best Actress lineup? And then she didn't, unfortunately. But I mean, in my mind, she was nominated for Best Actress. In my heart, she was nominated. Cooper Hoffman, I mean, I cannot imagine what it was like being in his shoes. You know, you're the son of Philip Seymour Hoffman. Your father was one of the most celebrated actors. I mean, still is, obviously, but he obviously he's no longer with us. And he worked with PTA so many times. And I remember people were complaining online, why are they hiring the actor of Philip Seymour, the son of Philip Seymour Hoffman, to be the lead in the movie? Well, obviously, PTA saw something very special in Cooper, and Cooper gave a fantastic performance. Gary is a very interesting character that could have been written so poorly and acted so, but Cooper just adds a lot to that character. He's funny, he's charismatic, he's likable, he's charming, he's very cocky. There's so many different personas to Gary Valentine, and he's just so, he's so great in the role, and the chemistry between the two of them is literal magic. If the chemistry between the two of them did not work, the entire movie would not have worked. So it's really great that these two worked off each other really beautifully, and then the supporting cast surrounding them I think was really great. I'm not a big Sean Penn fan. I've vocalized that I'm not too super high on him as an actor, but I'm not going to talk about him as a person. That's a different discussion for another time. But as a performer, he's never really done much to wow me, but I really liked him a lot in this movie. Tom Waits as Rex Blau was a really funny supporting character. Ladies and gentlemen, good people at the cock, put that dinner down. That salad can wait. Let that steak get cold. Man, I'm just telling you, the fact that I know the screenplay from top to bottom is really kind of embarrassing. And Bradley Cooper as John Peters. Listen, I was really hoping that some miracle would happen. The Academy, obviously, even though they haven't awarded him an Oscar, they love nominating Bradley Cooper. So I was like, maybe he could get in. No, he didn't get in, and I was very depressed. But I was really happy that SAG nominated him, and they chose the best clip when they showed him. He storms back with the car. There's no gasso in the goddamn car, Steve-O! Oh, my God. Right. It's just brilliant. It's brilliant. And you know what? Seeing Benny Safdie act with all these incredible filmmakers is so cool to me. I mean, he's obviously a great working director. Good Time, Uncut Gems. Uncut Gems, masterpieces. But the fact that he's working with PTA, and he was in Pieces of a Woman, and then he could do a film like Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Like, the fact that he's doing all these different projects when he's not directing is so cool to me. And, you know, just, God, everything about this movie is just so great. It's paced beautifully. the needle drops in this movie are excellent. Literally opening with July Tree by Nina Simone is like, that's a great way to open up the movie. It's just like you're just placed in this world and it just feels so magical. It's like, it's so great. It's just like Alana just walking and then, you know, the photo day is happening and everything. It's, oh my God, it's so good. And, you know, now this film means way more to me than it ever did. I was in Los Angeles at the time of this recording last week. I stayed in Sherman Oaks. It felt very fitting because I felt like Gary Valentine. I was like, oh my God, I'm literally staying in the home of Gary Valentine. It's just so insane to me. And my lovely friend who housed me during my visit, she surprised me on my birthday by taking me to the Licorice Pizza store. I didn't bother going inside. I heard it wasn't very good. But just standing outside, I literally was crying. And it's not even funny at all. It's just, this film means the absolute world to me. And I saw it, oh my God, I saw it 8 times in theaters. I saw it 3 times in New York. I went to 2 70mm screens. I went to a jaw-droppingly incredible 35mm screen at Lincoln Center, which you happen to be at as well. This was way before we knew each other. Mm-hmm. And I did, without question, one of the best nights of my entire life. Like, I literally was shaken up after that. I met Alana. I met Cooper. The pictures are terrible, but that I'm never going to show them to anybody. They're only going to be for me and me only. But yeah, it was just an incredible experience. Just like seeing the passion that everyone had for this movie is really, really impressive. And everyone did such a great job. And Alana's family, I have to shout them out because her dad, incredible performance.
Love her dad.
He was so good. Literally, when she comes in and he just says very nonchalant, excuse me, what the fuck? Oh, it's so good. Man, there's so much that I could say about this movie. Like, it's, oh my God, it's really become one of my all-time favorite films. And, you know, a lot of people are shocked that it's not even my favorite film from PTA. It's shocking to me as well, considering I've seen it probably like 15 times at this point. I watched this movie a lot. I played it in the background a lot. It's a go-to comfort movie for me now. Whenever I feel down, I put on Licorice Pizza. It just helps lift my spirits up. It's so great. I love it so much. I can't stop talking about it, and I will never stop talking about it. So I apologize to the haters of this movie. It's okay that you don't love it, but please don't hate me for loving it as much as I do.
Yeah, I mean, that's, if you don't like it, that's your prerogative. Totally. But I do really like it. And you brought up that Q&A. They say, like, don't meet your heroes, really. But that was truly, like, one of the best movie-going experiences of my life. I can't even describe it without, like, I have tears welling in my eyes right now. It was just the way that Paul Thomas Anderson talks about filmmaking and talked about this movie was so inspiring to me. And so, I don't know, it all made sense why I loved him so much and why, like, I'm here doing all of this. And I was just so blown away and so happy that he didn't let me down and was just everything that I wanted him to be and more. And yeah, I mean, after that Q&A, so I actually haven't watched Licorice Pizza again since that Q&A because it felt so pure and so, like, exactly what you want, what that movie should be and why it exists. Like, yeah. It was just so, so wonderful that I haven't watched it since. And it was funny because when we left that Q&A, I remember, so I went to see it with my sister, who also adores the movie. It was her favorite movie of that year.
Same.
She was on the phone with my mom, who was like, how was it? Like, how was PTA and everything? And she was like, well, Sophia can't talk right now because she's sobbing.
Aww.
Which was me walking to the, you know, Columbus Circle station. But yeah, it was wonderful. And yeah, I think, you know, with all those scenes like you mentioned, with going from Jack Holden to, you know, to John Peters and Bradley Cooper, one of my favorites, I love this performance so much. I think it's one of the most striking things he's ever done in his career, to Joel Walks and showing how Alana feels about all of these horrible men is so crucial to the movie. And again, I think it's something that a lot of people missed. And PTA isn't putting her through the ringer because he wants to see her suffer we're experiencing that with her.
Yeah.
And that's a very different thing that a lot of filmmakers don't do when we watch women really go through it on screen. Like, we're just watching her grow up and figure it out.
Yeah.
And experience that arrested development and that sort of attention that comes from older men and why she's drawn to go back to the attention and the harmlessness of Gary at the end. So, yeah, I think it's a happy movie, but it's also a very sad movie. And
it is.
I like the warmth and the melancholy. I like the combination of the two.
Yeah. It's really just like a nice hug, like being given to you when watching this. It's just so, so great. Let me ask you this. What is your favorite quote from the movie?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, there's so, so many that I use all the time. It's really hard to choose because I do love like the silly ones, like the John Peters, like, are you, you know, like a Capricorn Sagittarius, or the there's no gasso in the goddamn car, Steve-o. I mostly find myself like loving the quiet moments in the screenplay that show just how good he is with tone. So like when Alana's sitting on the curb, just watching those boys act like fools with the gas cans.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see her in that moment like, what am I doing? Who am I? Like, I am too old for this. I love those moments. I love everything that Gary says in the beginning of the film too. Like, song and dance, man. Oh, there are so many good ones.
You're stop an actress. Using time you should as be an actress.
Stop using time as an excuse, Alana. Our roads took us here is really good. Because that's Gary. Like that's who he is. They're almost too many. I think the film is so well written though.
Oh my
so
god. Well written. You gotta stop yelling at people. Oh, fuck off, Danielle. Why didn't this win Best Original Screenplay? Like, seriously, I will never understand that.
It's horrible. It's horrible that it didn't. But PTA is too cool for the Oscars.
He is like, too cool Branagh for the Oscars.
Really wanted one. I don't think PTA really cares deep down.
Yeah, at this point, I don't think he cares. But one day, he'll be Academy Award winner Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yes, he will. And if he's not, he'll join the likes of Godard and Altman and all of these fantastic filmmakers who are better than a lot of the filmmakers who have Oscars.
That's a great point. And, you know, like, I wouldn't have been angry if Licorice Pizza lost its award to... Listen, no disrespect to the Belfast fans out there. I'm sure there's someone listening that loves that movie. But, like, if it had lost to a better screenplay, then, you know, I wouldn't have been as annoyed. But, like, oh, God.
It was upsetting. It's just from a different time. And people, I think, have trouble with that. And also, like, the campaign, United Artists and MGM, it's, like, not the best. So I think if Focus would have had it, if Searchlight would have had it, it could have been a really different story.
Yeah, you and I talked about this because, like, they fucked up Cyrano's campaign that year. And,
totally.
You know, they also really fucked up Women Talking's campaign. Even though Women Talking managed to win the Adapted Screenplay Oscar, it's like Women Talking probably could have done so much better had it been under the hands of a much better studio that's way better with campaign. Like, it's really unfortunate. So, you know, hopefully what PTA does next, hopefully it's not with this studio because... I don't want another PTA film to, like, fizzle and not succeed award season-wise. Yeah, yes, this film got a lot of nominations. Not at the Oscars, but it did very well nomination-wise. But the fact that it just went home with, like, really nothing is so disappointing to me.
Alana should have won Best Actress. That's my final word on Licorice Pizza.
She was my Best Actress of 2021. Mm-hmm. She should have won. Yeah. And Bradley Cooper should have been nominated for Supporting Actor.
Absolutely.
Licorice Pizza, so much to be said, but we gotta move on to our number one. So obviously our number one films both star Daniel Day-Lewis,
the king
himself. So and obviously they're two different films, so you know, the moment I realized that I really wanted to have you on was when I first came across Oscar Wilde, and like practically every episode I heard you talk about Daniel Day-Lewis. I'm like, can she shut up about Daniel Day-Lewis already? Fuck. But I'm like, no, this is perfect. And your love for Phantom Thread is crazy. So I would just love for you to tell the audience, and I would love to hear why Phantom Thread is your favorite film directed by Paul Thomas Anderson.
Well, I will never shut up about Daniel Day-Lewis because we don't have another like him, and I don't think we ever will. So, yeah, Phantom Thread is my number one. This movie changed my life. I liked PTA before this movie, but this one knocked me out like Reynolds when he falls over and ruins the wedding dress. That's how I felt after I saw this. I wasn't sick to my stomach, of course, and didn't need to be taken care of in that way, but it was just totally unexpected to me. And this actually, on paper, is a film that I would like. I love period pieces. I love Daniel Day-Lewis. I love things set in London around this time period. I do love fashion. So when I saw this trailer and heard the first pieces of that Johnny Greenwood score, I remember, I don't even know what film I was seeing at the time, but my friend that I went with, we looked at each other and we were like, what is that about Phantom Thread? Like, what will this be? And, you know, I was familiar with Paul Thomas Anderson, of course, but this was just something that was completely unexpected in the way that I was just bowled over after I watched it. I love Gothic inspired films too. Mm-hmm. Rebecca is one of my favorite Hitchcock films. I love The Passionate Friends. I love films by Pelham Pressburger. And I feel like he really was interested in all of those things here. And I love that it's a ghost story. It's just sublime. Yes. And, you know, over the years, as I've watched it over and over again, I've noticed that it reveals more of itself and it reveals more of yourself with each viewing. It's so deep. I think it's a perfect movie. The fact that he's his own DP on this is unreal.
I know.
Because this is so well shot. Like, you would think this was a cinematography winner. The shots in this movie are some of the most beautiful. I mean, I think of Reynolds and Alma at the New Year's Eve party.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
My God, right? It's just, it's crazy. I think the writing is also just whip smart. And like Reynolds, you know, he's this older man who has, you know, he has these women who court him and who he courts and who, you know, he mentions being a confirmed bachelor and how he can't get married because he makes wedding dresses. And he uses the phrase, "I'm incurable," which is so important because PTA always does things like this where, why would he say I'm incurable? Why wouldn't he just say I'm not going to get married? Another screenwriter, maybe Kenneth Branagh, would have done something like that. But incurable, like bringing it back around, thinking, putting the seeds in your head that sickness and curing someone of something could come up throughout this film. Brilliant. I love how he does that. And again, that theme of like, I need you in order to survive. But if I keep you in my life, you might kill me. Like, that is a big part of this movie. I think that Alma, oh my God, Alma is one of the most important characters in film to me. I think that what he does with this character is so, so unique. And what Vicky Krieps does, I mean, you feel all of her pain throughout the movie. And a lot of his films also, they capture a collision between two people, a collision between a person who exists in a very established world with specific rules that apply to them that they won't bend for, and an interloper who comes into their world. And this is a perfect example of that and what can happen, why that can feel dangerous, but also intoxicating. And I love films about poisoning people too. Like, I do throughout my, you know, looking at different films that I love, if poisonous mushrooms are involved, I am in. I loved that, of course, here. I was so attached to this movie early on, and I'm so happy that it has had such a cult following. You know, I'm a leader of the Threadheads. I love, you know, all of the obsession that this movie has garnered from fans. It's such a special movie. Leslie Manville as Cyril, of course. Like, it, the whole movie is just so perfect to me and how it unfolds. And I could talk about Phantom Thread forever, but I will just say, like, the camera work with the steady camera, the still camera, those long takes feels very different from something like Magnolia, which we haven't talked about, which is like very frantic mm-hmm. and energetic.
Yeah.
And like, this is just so still and precise. And I love that. And I think just to end it by saying, like, I would not have my podcast. I would not be in film criticism. I would not be doing any of this without Phantom Thread, because it really inspired me to think about films differently and to, I don't know, realize that I could connect with people in like deeper ways related to film and the themes that come up for us when we talk about films that are as rich as Phantom Thread. Oh, I'm so happy it exists.
God, I'm so happy it exists, because like you brought up, like, had it not been for this film, I mean, you wouldn't be doing this. And I'm so glad that you're here doing this. I'm just so happy that this film came out and it left such a big impact on you. And now we're here talking about PTA together, and it's just so it's just so exciting. And oh my God, the quotes are just so incredible. Literally, I remember when I first saw the movie, and he just said, "Kiss me, my girl, before I'm sick," and then the music just belts. Oh my God. I went to a 35 millimeter print of this at the Metrograph on New Year's Eve mm-hmm. with my friend who had never seen the movie before. He recently got into PTA, and I said, "You gotta see Phantom Thread. It may not sound like the most interesting movie on paper, but trust me, it's really, really fucking good." And he was like, "Wow, this was amazing." And God, you know, the quotes, you said that do you know the whole Breakfast Order by heart?
I do know the whole Breakfast Order by heart. I actually could probably recite this entire screenplay. I've seen this movie so many times.
I am just so curious to see if you actually know it by heart. Like, I just would love that. Like, the Phantom Thread enthusiast you are, I just would love to just see if you know it by heart. Because it's okay, a long order. It's a long order.
It is. It is. Okay, so he says, "A Welsh rarebit with a poached egg on top, please. Not too runny." Pauses a little bit, and then he goes, "And bacon, scones, butter, cream." He says butter weird. That's why I said it like that. Butter, cream, jam, not strawberry. Hold on, I'm trying to think for a second. And then she asks him, "Coffee or tea, perhaps?" And he goes, "Do you have lapsang?" And then she says, "Yes." And he says, "A pot of lapsang." And then the perfect line delivery of, "And some sausages."
Oh my God, you literally nailed it. You literally nailed it.
Yes. I'm so sorry. This is so embarrassing.
No, this is so fun. Yeah, this is so great.
I still do this. I need to do it this year, though. Every year on the anniversary of when I first saw Phantom Thread, I would make the breakfast and have my friends over for a movie party, and we would watch it.
Oh my God, that sounds like the best party ever.
Yeah, it's so fun. Yeah, when I lived in DC, I would do that for my friends. I need to do it again. No, it was really fun.
That's so cool. That's great. Oh man, mm-hmm. the love that you have for Phantom Thread is just really incredible. I love it so much. Okay. All right. My number one is There Will Be Blood. Not only do I think this is the best film that he's directed, this is my favorite film that he's ever done as well. Obviously, this isn't as rewatchable as a film like Licorice Pizza or Punch Drunk Love. You know, it's long, it's very slow, it's very intense, it's very mind-bending. But my God, definitely in contention for top 10 films of the 21st century so far. Like, this is hands down one of the best films. I mean, probably top 5 films of the 2000s, and then top 10 of the 21st century so far. Like, okay, so there are two performances in my head that I consider to be the two maybe best performances I've ever seen from any actor: Jack Nicholson in The Shining and Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood. And if you ask me tomorrow, I could say Jack Nicholson, but I really firmly believe that the greatest performance that I have maybe ever seen on screen is Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood. Daniel Plainview, my God, what a character. You brought up how, you know, you see this rise of him, and then you see this fall of him. It's a great rise and fall story. I love films like this. Like, that's one of the reasons why I love Tar so much. You see the rise of this artist, and then you see her downward spiral, and it's just so compelling to watch. And there are so many elements of this movie that just make it as riveting to me as I could have imagined. The score, the imagery, the costumes, the sets, the acting, everything about this movie is so incredible to me. I'm happy Daniel won. I don't think anyone else could have taken home that award. If it had not been Daniel Day-Lewis, it would have been a massive upset. Paul Dano should have been nominated for supporting actor. I don't understand why he wasn't nominated for this. I love the ending so much. It's honestly top three endings of all time for me. The last 10 to 15 minutes of this movie are literal perfection. And, you know, 2007 was an insane award season because it's literally... I'm a big No Country for Old Men fan. That's one of my favorite films from the Coen brothers. And I'm really happy that film walked away with Best Picture. But my God, like, deep down, I'm like, There Will Be Blood should have taken it home. But honestly, it's one of those scenarios to where either of them could have won and I would have been fine with it. It's like literally two masterpieces going up against each other. And it's like, God, any other year, any other year, this could have walked away probably with a screenplay win, a director win, and a picture win. PTA could have literally won three Oscars that night. Mm-hmm. But instead, we went the other way around. But I'm not too angry about that. But yeah. God, everything about this movie is literal perfection. I really can't add on to what you had said a few minutes ago. But I just am so transfixed by this movie. Every viewing, I find something new to appreciate. And I've seen this movie maybe like four or five times. It's weird. It's one of those movies that I can honestly watch over and over again and never get bored by it. Like, you know, it's long, it's slow, it's not the most pleasant watch, but it's just so good. It's so good. The explosion sequence, oh my God, literally, like, I remember when I first saw them, saw this movie, and it just literally, like, shook me up to my core. I've abandoned my child! Just that whole monologue in the church is so incredible. And, you know, you brought up the milkshake monologue and him going, I am the third revelation! It's brilliant.
Well, the I am the third revelation is so important, too, because it's a full circle moment on that of Daniel Plainview, you know, forcing himself to say, I've abandoned my child, because he doesn't care. Like, he'll say whatever it takes to... like get more money and get more oil and more land, and he has to do that in order to do it, but it's humiliating for him.
It is.
What's he gonna do? He has to humiliate Eli back. So when he says I'm the third revelation, that again is that like capitalism and religion clashing and showing that oil is more important than religion. Money is more important than religion at this point in American history. And him saying like, I am the third revelation, it's a joke. It's a big joke, and it's funny because he's wasted and violent, but I mean, he is God, right, in that moment. Mm-hmm. Like he has more power than any sort of religion that Eli could share with him.
Absolutely. I mean, this film is a work of art. It's genius. It is PTA's best film. It's my favorite film that he's ever done. Daniel Day-Lewis, seriously, one of the greatest performances that I've ever seen. Arguably, to me, the best performance I maybe have ever seen from an actor. One of the absolute best actor wins of all time. I'm so glad that he swept that season by winning practically everything. It's a really incredible picture. And, man, I just don't know how anyone else could have pulled this off. But PTA, he knocked it out of the park. And again, like I said before, the fact that he went from doing Punch Drunk Love to this, it's like, what a major flex. That's a major flex right there. And
it's
love
incredible.
It so much. It's really incredible. And God, like, you know, to quote Al Pacino in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, this is what a picture. Literally, what a picture. Like, straight up. This
Gina,
is
Gina. Oh my God. I can quote Once Upon a Time in Hollywood all day, too.
That's a great movie, too.
PTA. Yeah.
Oh, man. But it's so, so great. And, you know, we're going to talk about some of the films that didn't make the cut. So before we do that, let's recap our list from 5 to 1. So, Sophia, what is your list?
So my list from 5 to 1, at number 5, we have Boogie Nights. At number 4, Licorice Pizza. Number 3, The Master. Number 2, There Will Be Blood. And number 1, Phantom Thread.
And to recap my list, coming in at number 5, The Master. Number 4, Phantom Thread. Number 3, Punch Drunk Love. Number 2, Licorice Pizza. And number 1, There'll Be Blood. So that is over our list. So let's talk about some of the films that didn't make the cut. So obviously, to me, I think all of his films are at least good. There's not one that I don't like. There's obviously some I like less than others. But, you know, to talk about the films that didn't make the cut, like, you know, what is your take on, you know, Magnolia and Inherent Vice and Heart 8? Like, what's your take on those films?
Yeah, so Inherent Vice is actually my number 6. I find Inherent Vice to be so beguiling, and I'm a big fan of postmodernism, like in literature, and I feel like the fact that PTA tackled this is really incredible. I love the Joaquin Phoenix performance in it and love the cinematography. I feel like it is just a beautiful film that I will never understand. So it will always be outside of my like list of favorites of PTA films, but I love it nonetheless. And I have also found a weird community of people online who also love Inherent Vice. So it's really interesting. It definitely has its supporters. Other ones though, so like Heart 8 for me, it just feels like a first feature. It's incredible. Like the performances in it, I think are really strong, but it's one that like, and I love the work that Gwyneth Paltrow does mm-hmm. at this time. I think she has my favorite performance in the movie probably just because I find her fascinating in this movie and in this period in the 90s. But it's one of those that just feels like, you know, a director making a feature out of a short. And that's fine. I think I'm happy that it got him where it did, but it's never one that I return to. And then Magnolia, I'm kind of surprised, and I feel like listeners might be surprised that neither of us had it on our list because It is a film that people are very fond of. And some people, you know, it's their favorite film of PTA. For me, I love the swings that it's taking, and I think it's certainly a directorial achievement with an amazing ensemble cast. I mean, Tom Cruise in that movie, Julianne Moore, you've Jason Robards, like so many wonderful actors are in that movie in really unique new roles. The frogs, of course, are important, But it's one that just will, it's never one I want to rewatch. I think sometimes it feels a little tiresome to me and it all connects and clicks together, but he is sometimes, I feel like, just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks. And a lot of it does stick and it really works for me, but it's just not one I love as much as his others, if that makes sense.
Right. No, absolutely. I love Magnolia. It's fantastic. It's really beautifully done. And the 3-hour runtime is really impressive. And it rivets me the entire time.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think Tom Cruise should have won the Oscar for supporting actor. I think that honestly, that might be my favorite performance he's ever given. I think that's easily like top 3 or top 2 performances from Tom Cruise. He's so incredible in that film. And it's really incredible. Heart 8, I just watched for the first time last week and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very solid. I agree. Gwyneth Paltrow was probably my favorite performance from the film as well, which is weird because I'm usually not super high on her work as an actress. I don't know why, she just has never really done much for me, but she is very good in Heart 8. And, you know, every time I do see her, I'm like, man, you used to be married to my dear, dear Chris Martin, and now you're not anymore. Aww. So, you know, like I think about that all the time.
Yeah.
But no, really solid directorial debut. Definitely one of my favorite directorial debuts that I've watched in recent memory. And Inherent Vice is so interesting to me because I do really like it, but I literally don't understand it at all.
It's really tough.
Really tough, and I love Joaquin in it. I think Joaquin is really great comedically. Mm-hmm. I think when given the right material, he could really pull it off. And of course, when working with PTA again, it's just so exciting. But like, I don't know, a lot of his delivery and timing is just so impeccable to me. Like, after he shoots that guy on the stairs, he just stands there, he pants, did I hit you? It's so good. And Josh Brolin, I think, is the standout of that movie. He is absolutely hysterical in it.
Yeah,
and
he is.
Yeah, I love that ensemble. And I love that he got to work with Reese Witherspoon again, Joaquin and Reese. I love that they got to collaborate together again. But yeah, I don't know. it's an interesting one from him, but it's the only one that I can't really see myself watching over and over again. Like, I could see myself going back to Heart 8 more times than Inherent Vice than I can. Like, Inherent Vice was just a lot for me to process. I think it's cool that a studio like Warner Brothers put that movie out. Like, it's obviously not your typical mainstream film. It's not one that everyone's going to appreciate. It's not one that everyone's going to understand. But I remember when I saw the movie and the audience was just so, like, befuddled by everything that was going on. And when the movie ended, I would not even joking. I remember hearing someone just scream from the top of their lungs, "I don't get it!" Like, they just scream from the top of their lungs, and I'm like, "Well, I didn't get it either, buddy." But, you know, interesting movie for sure. Interesting movie for sure. And now, and here's the thing too that I'm really curious about. So there's all these reports coming out that says that PTA's next movie, and these aren't even from reliable outlets, but if
No.
it's true that the next PTA film is going to star DiCaprio, Joaquin, Regina Hall, Viggo Mortensen, was he announced to be in
Yeah,
it?
he was announced.
Yeah, and oh God, who's the other person? Rachel Taylor. Like, if that's the next film he's doing, listen, like I said before, I literally don't care what it's about. He could make whatever he wants with whoever he wants. If he gets to work with Joaquin again, that's so exciting to me. If he gets to work with Viggo, he's never worked with Viggo before. That's a really exciting pairing. And DiCaprio, I mean, the fact that PTA worked with DiCaprio's father before Leo himself, it's a really interesting thing for me. And Regina Hall, I mean, she's always good. So I think it's really cool that she might be collaborating with him. But then there were reports a while ago saying that he might do some jazz movie with Denzel, which, I mean, I would literally cry if that pairing happened. Like, that would be one of the coolest pairings of recent memory, PTA and Denzel. That would be like, my brain would explode. So if it turns out that one of these two films is his next projects, how excited are you? Are you super excited? Like, how excited are you?
I mean, I'm always excited for a new PTA film. It's a drop everything situation. It's also a get ready for people to not understand it situation, which is always a little like, I always have trouble with that. I mean, it happened with Licorice Pizza, of course, but it also happened with Phantom Thread. Like, I remember when people called it propaganda for toxic masculinity, which is just so stupid. Like, I'm sorry, that's just such a dumb reading of the movie and completely missing the point. So you always have to prepare for those sorts of things, I think, but the love for PTA for me is so strong, and I think that's why sometimes I get upset when people, I don't know, have different readings and make assumptions about the movies. But yeah, I'm thrilled either way. I think the interesting thing is, you know, the Denzel jazz film would be, you know, one of my most anticipated movies ever. Like that just that's also PTA going to like there will be blood territory for me, I feel. Like I want to see Denzel as like a mean genius in jazz. That's what I want. I feel like he's so good at playing these towering figures, and you know, we know PTA can get some of the best performances ever out of his actors. So I feel like that's exciting. The Leo one is interesting because I've heard that that is going to be Vineland, which is another Thomas Pynchon book, like Inherent Vice. So I'm curious to see maybe how he does postmodernism again. But again, like these details are so unclear at this point, and PTA loves keeping things unclear for as long as possible. I mean, remember, Licorice Pizza was originally Soggy Bottom, so
Not sure
it
how
could
you
be
would have felt if
anything.
that stayed the title. I don't know
I
how I would
know,
have
I
felt
know.
about that.
I know. Licorice Pizza is so good because it's like something gross with something beautiful, which is exactly what the movie is. Things that shouldn't go together but do in the end.
Yes, all because of PTA. It only works because PTA is behind it. Yeah, I
Exactly.
mean, you know, what else could we say about PTA that hasn't been said already? Seriously, one of the best voices out there. Easily my favorite working filmmaker. Like, I don't know how he's able to pull off these incredible stories and bring them to life, but he really is one of the best voices out there. I will continue to be a fan of him until he decides that he will be done making movies, which I hope won't be for 40 more years. I hope he keeps going and keeps going and keeps going. I hope he's like Clint Eastwood and makes movies until he's 90. I hope he keeps going. But
Me
yeah,
too.
I love Paul. Like, this is the only Paul Anderson that matters. I I do not apologize to any Paul W.S. Anderson fans. Sorry, there's one Paul Anderson, and it's Paul Thomas Anderson. Like, seriously, like, just one of the best out there. So what are your final thoughts on this god?
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah, I mean, we've said so much, but there's also, of course, like, always so much to say about Paul Thomas Anderson. I think just start anywhere with his films. They're so different, like you mentioned. He tackles so many genres, but I think there's something in there for everyone. And I'll say again, it's okay to laugh. It is okay to laugh during a PTA film. And I would also just recommend a great book called Paul Thomas Anderson Masterworks. It's written by Adam Naiman. He's a film critic and scholar and contributor over at The Ringer. And it's just a fantastic, beautiful coffee table book with great essays. It has interviews with a lot of key PTA collaborators like Dylan Tickner, Jack Fisk, the production designer, Robert Elswit, Johnny Greenwood, Vicky Krapes. I highly recommend that book if you want to learn more about PTA.
Yeah, I'll definitely add that to my list of books to read. So many books I have to read. Sophia, it was such a blast having you on. I'm so glad that we finally got to do this. This was a great discussion. Thank you so much for coming on today to talk to me about PTA.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. This really was so much fun. I love talking about Paul Thomas Anderson and all of his wonderful films.
Absolutely. And where could the people find you online? Where could they find Oscar Wilde?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Sophia_Sim, C-I-M. I constantly tweet about Paul Thomas Anderson films there, Bradley Cooper, lots of different, you know, film coverage, which is always exciting, you know, getting into the year ahead. And then you can find my podcast, Oscar Wilde. We release episodes every Friday. We're going on a short break after the Oscars, but we'll be back soon with an anniversary episode dedicated to the great film Casablanca. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Oscar Wilde Pod, and Wild is just W-I-L-D, no E at the end, like the author. It's a play on that, though.
I will put links for that in the description below, and you guys can follow me on all social medias at Brian Suffield. You guys could subscribe to the show on any podcasting platform you're listening to. Rate and review, share this around. You guys can follow us on Twitter and Instagram as well to stay up to date with what's going on in the Film Fragments world. Guys, it's always such an honor to have you guys listen to the show. I'm so, so appreciative of every single one of you that tunes in every single week to listen to me and some random person talk about their favorite films from an actor, director, or genre of their choice. Thank you so much, as always, for listening, guys, and I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.